We all belong outside. We're drawn to nature, whether it's the recorded sounds of the ocean we doze off to or the succulents that adorn our homes. Nature makes all of our lives, well, better. Despite all this, we often go about our busy lives removed from it. But the outdoors is closer than we realize. With AllTrails, you can discover trails nearby and explore confidently with offline maps and on-trail navigation. Download the free app today and make the most of your summer with AllTrails.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Folks, if you like good old-fashioned true crime mysteries, if you like stories where you feel like you're a detective finding clues, June's Journey is the name of this new game that you can play on your iPhone or your Android. You are uncovering the mystery of June's sister's murder. It's this well-to-do family in the 1920s living in a Great Gatsby-like mansion. Each scene uncovers new aspects of the story. Some parts are in New York, some parts are in Paris. There's all kinds of objects you're finding and trying to assess whether they're meaningful or not. You collect information, filling out your own photo album, and you're keeping track of all the characters. There's romance, there's scandalous family secrets. It feels like a really fun play or movie. And I've only made it through like 5 scenes, but I am told you could crack the case. All you need is an internet connection and downloading on iOS or Android. So discover your inner detective when you download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. Hey folks, this is Risk, the show where people tell true stories they never thought they'd dare to share. I'm Kevin Allison, and every Thursday we release these special episodes where we look back at content from the earlier years of the podcast. This week it's the best of Mother's Day stories, number 2. A couple of stories, sweet and bittersweet, about moms. In a little bit, we're going to hear from Susan Kent. But before that, a story by Dave Hill that he first shared on the podcast in January of 2013. Here's Dave now with a story we call Bunny.
Growing up, I always thought, my whole life really, I thought I had a really good understanding an appreciation of death. Like if someone gets sick or they get old or they get hit by a bus or they get accidentally thrown in a burlap sack and thrown over the side of a boat in the middle of the night or whatever, and they're dead. Like that's it. Like I was just like, well, that's just life, you know? And then there'd be a funeral and a wake and a reception, like when that'd be kind of like this fun kind of victory lap, you know, after a hopefully nice long and nice, you know, life. And like, you know, as a kid, I would, my great grandparent or someone die, and I'd be like, oh cool, like we're gonna have sandwiches and cookies, this would be great. Like I may have been like too accepting of death now that I think about it. But anyway, a couple years ago my mom died, and it was like a whole different story. Like all of a sudden I was like, whoa, like, well, it was as if no one had ever died before in the history of time, and like the very concept of death didn't even exist. I just couldn't wrap my head around the fact that she died. Like even not even like on a grief level. Like it was just like it didn't compute. Like, and it didn't make any sense, because definitely the last at least 2 or 3 times I saw my mom, she was so dead. Like I touched her, I kissed her, you know, and she was just like the deadest lady you could ever imagine. She was so dead. Like, could not be debated. Super dead lady. But I could not, still couldn't wrap my head around it. So I decided to tell myself that, you know, she just moved. And because I was like, that makes more sense to me. Like, she just moved, like, in the middle of the night. Like, my mom, you know, had a nice long life, and she lived in Cleveland the whole time. So it's like, you know, it's well within her rights to just pick up and move. Like, Paris, Paramus, wherever you want to go. Like, just get out of town for a little bit. But then I thought about it, like, and I was like, well, my mom is, like, a really nice lady. She wouldn't just pick up and move in the middle of the night and, like, leave all her stuff behind and leave my dad with all the house chores and, worst of all, make it so, like, I can't borrow money ever or anything. Like, there's no way she would do this. So eventually I had to just accept, like, I guess she's, you know, everyone's saying she's dead. I guess I'll just go with that thing that she's dead. And my mom was an Irish Catholic lady, so of course she's like, she was super religious, and I know she believed in an afterlife. Like, I think she's like pretty much counting on it. And I know opinions vary on that, but I was like, for her sake, like, I know she wanted an afterlife. So I was like, then she gets an afterlife. So I was like, that's where my mom is. She's in the afterlife. And then once I thought that, I was like, well, you know, I jumped to the next logical conclusion that she could definitely see me all the time, like, no matter what I did. And as soon as you start thinking like that, I was like, my mom can see me. And I was like, oh my God, I do so much fucked up stuff. Like, pretty much everything I do is so fucked up all the time. And then I had to lay down some ground rules with my mom. And I was like, Mom, you can't, you know, be checking out everything. Like, no, you can't go in the bathroom. Aside from, like, the obvious stuff that goes on in there, like the gross stuff. Like, I have so many moisturizers and just, like, embarrassed, just stuff straight men should not have. Like, and I'm like, that woman does not need to know about that. And then I live in a studio apartment, so, like, my bed takes up, like, half the place, and I'm like, so, all right, so if I'm in bed, she can't be seeing that. Like, not that I'm, like, just hanging and banging. I mean, I do all right. I do fine. I do great. but, you know, like, pull my boxers off in the middle of the night. It's just weird to have my ass hanging. Just stuff my mom shouldn't have to see, you know. And then the rest of my apartment is pretty much my desk, and that's where my computer is. So, no, you can't, you know, when I'm on my computer, she wouldn't understand the research that I do. So I was like, you can't, okay, no bathroom, no bed, no, whenever I'm at my desk. So it pretty much leaves, like, she can see me, like, putting on my shoes and, like, making spaghetti. And that stuff's adorable, don't get me wrong. But, like, I feel like my mom deserved more than that. So it's just, like, another thing I'm really frustrated about after she died. And then, you know, so she's gone, but my dad is still around. So as soon as my mom was gone, I was like, I have to really make the most of my time with my dad. Like, I can spend, you know, I miss my mom, but I can spend time with my dad. So I'm, like, really trying to up the ante on hanging out with him. And so, you know, we usually just hang out and drink coffee of various strengths and things and chat. And then we'll go out to eat. And, like, when my mom was alive, it'd always be like, she wouldn't want to go out to eat. She'd be like, let's just stay home. We'll boil something. But my dad, like, I can just be like, let's go out to eat. And be like, yeah, fuck yeah. He doesn't swear. He's a gentleman. But anyway, so we would go out. And my whole life, when we would go out to eat, like, it would never be like, never being concerned that I would actually pay for any of it. But somewhere along the line, as soon as my mom got sick with cancer a couple of years ago, right around then we would go out to eat. And, you know, like, in my 20s, I started to do where you, like, reach for your wallet, like right, like, I mean, my dad would be like, well, that's adorable. Like, you would, might actually, like, I knew I had no money, but I would be like, oh, it's sweet that you pretended. And but then I remember we were out to dinner and the check came, and I'm just sort of like, do that thing, Dad. So I took my wallet out just to see what would happen. And I'm waiting for him to just be like, oh, no, I got this one. And he didn't. And just to test him, I was like, let me get this one. And he's like, oh, okay. And I'm like, who the fuck is this guy? And I totally end up paying for dinner. I'm like, well, that was just a fluke. We go out again, and I pay for it again. It happens, you know, over and over, and I start to worry, and I call my siblings. I'm just like, oh, my God, like, you know, Dad's, you know, Mom's dying and you know, he's going broke. Like, he can't even pay for Chinese food now. Like, what's going on? Like, is he okay? And my, you know, I'm talking to my brother, and he's like, yeah, he's fine. Like, that guy's loaded. He could live like another 50 years and he's got a ton of money. So I'm like, God, this is even worse than I expected. Like I realized the only reason he could possibly be letting me pay for dinner was to like show me some sort of respect or something. Like, he's like, I have, son, I know you're a grown man who can pay for P.F. Chang's now. And I was like, that's what this is about, Dad. I do not need this kind of respect from you. So needless to say, so my mom's dead and my dad is bleeding me dry. So I'm like, oh, it's like, I'm, you know, getting like really depressed. And I was trying everything. It's like drinking a lot, prescriptions, therapy, everything. And the one thing that worked was running. And it's the most embarrassing. It's the worst. I hate run. It's the fucking worst. Does anyone run here? No, it's horrible, right? I mean, everything. I hate the time that it takes. I hate the outfits. I hate the running part is the worst. Where you actually, that's so bad. And even worse is like the other runners when you're running along and they see you from far away and they're like, hey, we're both running. Fuck you. Like, I'm miserable. I don't want to connect with you. So anyway, shortly after my mom died, I'm like out running in Cleveland, where I'm from. And thank you. And it's freezing out. And I was like running so far and like it's getting like, and it's dead of winter. And I start to think like, I can't feel my penis anymore. Like, I think I might be getting, like my testicles had jumped up into my body like long ago during the run. And I was like, oh man, like my penis is just this little nub, a cashew like nub, just frozen. I was like, I think I might get frostbite in my penis. I don't want this to happen, you know? And I start to panic and I'm too far from home to just turn it around. So I start like fluffing myself, you know, as I'm running. And then I start to think, like, who can see me, like, right now? Like, what's going on? You know, like people, I'm assuming people are, like, looking out their front window or, like, cars. So I come up with this, like, mathematical equation, like, how many, you know, every 30 seconds or so I can really try to revive my genitals. And, you know, I'm like, this is about survival. And so I didn't want anyone to really see that I was basically masturbating running down a main road in Cleveland. But then it occurred to me, like, the one person that could see all of it was my mother. And I was like, oh, fuck, Mom, you have a tough choice to make right now. Because, you know, like, whether you want, you know, your son to be masturbating publicly on the streets of your hometown, or you want me to, like, have it be awkward every time I go in the shower for the rest of my life, or whatever. So I'm like, Mom, you got to let me have this one. I'd like to think she said yes. But anyways, aside from all that, you know, the bigger thing is that I just miss her. Like, you know, I sort of wish death came with a sort of exit interview where you could like kind of talk it over. Like, I just want my mom to know that everything's okay and like I'm not gonna become a call girl unless I want or whatever. You know, I just didn't want her to worry, because my whole life I always did all this stuff, you know, writing and comedy and music and just stuff that doesn't guarantee, stuff that makes parents worry, you know? And it, like, I want my mom to get it, and I want her to be proud of me. And, you know, I spent my whole life, especially my adult life, just being really frustrated. I'm like, what's her problem, you know? And I remember when I was like 15, sneaking down into the kitchen, like in the middle of the night, and to bake cookies. And then like the door, it's like midnight and my mom's like, oh shit, and, like I'm busted at like making cookies. And she was like, no, we're cool. She was just like, basically, you give me some cookies and I won't tell anyone else in the house there's cookies. So I'm like, all right, shut the fucking door. I could swear in front of her. And so we're sitting down and we're chatting, just, you know, mostly cookie talk, like how good they are, like, you know, right when they're out of the oven and how good they are, or like after a while, like a little burn, not quite cooked, you know, like cookie talk. And as we're talking, like, I realize, I'm like, holy shit, like, this lady isn't just my mom, she's like a person, and like, I think we might even be friends. Like, I'm, oh, this is so gross. But, like, you know, I realized things would never be the same. Like, we were, you know, we had always been friends. We'd be friends for life. And it was, like, you know, kind of a nice realization. But, you know, for a 15-year-old, it's a bit horrifying. And in the last few months of my mom's life, when she was too sick to be at home, she was in the hospital, I would go, you know, I'd bring her, like, a bag of cookies every day. Do you guys know Tate's cookies? It's the best cookie, if you know them. They're the best. I only mention it in the podcast because I'm hoping for something will happen. No, but they're the best cookies. No, they are. So I'd bring them, and I would just let her eat as many, you know, we'd just eat as many as we could because I knew no matter how sick she got, you know, as long as she could eat cookies, like she was still my mom, like that's still, you know, even if she can barely talk, as long as she's like throwing down with the cookies, I'm like, that's totally her. So, you know, and the doctors would be like, no, you can, you know, just give her like one cookie a day, that's cool. But I was like, well, the cookie's gonna make her sick? They're gonna kill her? And they'd be like, no, the cancer's got that covered. It just, you know, probably, you know, that's not good. I guess even when you're dying, you shouldn't eat too many cookies. I disagree. So, so you know, we would just eat as many cookies as we could. And one of the last times, you know, I spent with her, I was in the hospital with her, and it was getting late, and the rest of my family had gone home, and I was helping her eat her hospital food, just like whatever steamed bullshit they bring you. And then I was like, oh, it's cookie time. And we break out the cookies, and we're eating these cookies and everything. And as we're sitting there, like, I'm like, oh, shit, like, you know, we're just, you know, she can barely talk at this point. And I realized, like, oh, my God, like, this is, like, I've spent my whole life being like, what's her problem? Why didn't she get me? Why is she, like, always worried about what I'm doing? And then it hit me. I'm like, she never had a problem with me. She was always proud of me. Like, this is, like, my own hang up. Like, she doesn't give a fuck. Like, she just wants to hang out and eat cookies with me. And, like, and then I was like, that's what this is, like, life is pretty much about. It's just kind of hanging out with people you love and eating cookies. Doesn't have to be cookies. But, and then, so, you know, it's getting late and she was ready to conk out and everything. And so I was like, oh, I'll put the cookies away. And I'm putting my coat on and I look at her and, you know, I say, oh, mom, you know, are you sick of me? And she says, yeah, I'm sick of you. And then, you know, she sort of looks at me with perfect timing. Then she just smiles a little bit and says, I love you. And those ended up, you know, I couldn't have planned this in a million years or anything like that. But the cookies that night ended up being the last thing she ever ate. And those, you know, those words were the last words she ever said to me. And it just, you know, I realized like sometimes in the darkest moment, you can just, you know, bright light will just blind the fuck out of you. So I was like, holy shit. Anyway, call your mother.
Thank you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
We're back.
So for me, the holidays when I was a little kid were about decorating the house with my mother. Before October was even halfway done, she would be dragging boxes out of the attic so that we could start hanging garlands and going through the ornaments and getting our tree ready. And so by Halloween, we were done. And then I spent the beginning of November running behind her and turning off the lights so nobody in town knew that the tree was already up before Thanksgiving. But as proactive as my mother was about decorating, she was a huge procrastinator when it came to buying our gifts. And so every Christmas Eve, we would be packed into the car first thing in the morning, and my little sister and I would be driven to Albany or Macon, Georgia, the towns that were closest to us that had a mall, where my mother would spend the entire day running from store to store, frantically buying as much as she could, because Christmas was huge for her, and she wanted to make sure that Christmas Day was super special. The thing is, though, she never made a lot of money, and what she did make, she didn't really manage well, and the panic of being there Christmas Eve, trying to make sure that the next day was the best Christmas ever, would make her a little crazy, and she would buy extravagant gifts without really thinking it through. We'd go home after the mall had closed, and my sister and I would stay up with her all night and help her wrap our gifts so that we could open them the next morning. And then as she's handing them over the next day, you could see the buyer's remorse kind of start to settle in. I would open a pair of Gloria Vanderbilt jeans, and her face would kind of drop at the memory of the price of it. And my sister would open the Atari system, and oh God, you could see it. And so then as she's handing the gifts out, it would start to come with a little commentary. Y'all know, it cost a lot to give you the best Christmas ever. Well, I hope Fitzgerald Waterlighting Bond's in the holiday spirit next month when I can't pay the bill. So then by the end of the day, as excited as we wanted to be about all these amazing presents, we just felt shitty because they had caused Mother such financial burden. And I started to hate Christmas as much as I loved it. So it was this fucked up time of year for me. And once I moved away to college, it just got worse because on top of the fact that my mother was still doing the panicked shopping spree right before Christmas and buying too much stuff and then regretting it and making us feel awful about it. When I left my little hometown of Fitzgerald, Georgia to go to Tifton, Georgia, which is, you've never heard of that either. It was a big step for us. They also had a mall. And so from there I went to Florida State. And so I was making these little tiny steps out and away from my mother, and she began to see me as a deserter who had abandoned the family to try to have some fancy life in the big city. And that really kicked in once I was in my late 20s and I moved to New York. And I was living in Brooklyn, and she called me one day and she's like, "Susan, you know, it's just like you've moved up there and you've got this highfalutin life now and you just think you're better than all of us." And I didn't think I was better than all of them, but I knew that I was different, and I didn't want to go home anymore. The only times I did go were for Christmas, and once I got to New York and was living my highfalutin life, broke in Brooklyn, I finally got up the courage to tell her I wasn't coming home that year. And I was scared because it was the biggest day of the year for her. So I decided I would tell her that I didn't have enough money for a flight, which I was broke, but I had enough money to get home. I just knew that she'd at least understand not having that. And it went over pretty well. So the next couple of days, I spent in Park Slope at a friend's apartment with a big group of people. And we drank and we danced and we watched movies and we laughed. And not once did any of them ever mention how they had scraped and scrimped and sacrificed to buy me the gifts that you probably aren't going to appreciate anyway. And it was the best Christmas of my life. And so after that, I didn't go home for Christmas, and I only went home for emergencies, which the first of them came about a year later. My sister called because she had found my mom collapsed in the kitchen floor and had to have her rushed to the hospital. And when I get back to Georgia, my sister sits me down and tells me what happened. You know, well, we got her to the hospital, and she woke up, and she said she had a migraine headache, so they gave her Tylenol 3, but Mama said it didn't touch it, so she asked for a Vicodin. And so she took the Vicodin, and it didn't work either, so they gave her a Percocet, and then another Percocet, and I think after that it was a Dilaudid, and that's when she finally passed out. I don't know, Susan, I'm worried, because, like, that seems like a lot of medicine. She must be really sick. Well, guys, I don't know about you, but I've taken a Vicodin. And I've taken a Percocet. And I would never take the two together. And the idea that somebody could take all of those pills and still be coherent enough to ask for more, well, I knew what was going on. Amy, Mama's not sick. She's a fucking drug addict. Once we realized that, my mom had cancer at that point. She had been diagnosed with stage 3 breast cancer, and somewhere along the way, she had developed a 90 plus pill a week habit. She really loved a benzo, which is why she was so good at that Vicodin Percocet combo. And I had also developed a habit along the way. I was addicted to A&E's intervention, so I knew exactly what to do. I went to my mom's house with a shopping bag and I gathered all the pill bottles. I knew to look underneath the drawers and in her pants pockets, and I found everything and I went to her doctor. And there we decided we were gonna have her forcibly admitted to rehab. So the next two nights, I stayed with her in the hospital while she detoxed from all the pills. And we went on some adventures together in her hallucinations. Some dead relatives came to visit. We rode some roller coasters together, which was awesome. And I journaled about the entire experience. And I called my stories Tales from the Cot. And because it was 2008, my journal at the time was a blog. So, a few weeks later, when my mother found the blog about her rehab, because of course she did, it didn't go very well. And she made a comment on a particular post that accused me of being a liar. And she said that I had my facts all wrong. She hoped my friends knew better. And she told me that she was done with me. And if you don't know what done with is in the South, that means dead to me. We were estranged. I was out of her life. So we didn't talk for a couple of years. And it wasn't until her doctor had suggested that she get her affairs in order that she gave me a call. During that phone call, we talked about the blog that I had written, and I explained to her that I never intended to hurt her. It was just that I was broken by what had happened, and I was a writer, and I didn't know how else to get my thoughts out. And I assured her that I had taken everything down as soon as she had made the comment, and I was so, so sorry. She told me how hard it had been to be estranged from me for the last couple of years and how much she had missed me. You know, Susan, it's just that I used to love you so much. Mom, was that past tense? Well, Susan, We ended that conversation by her telling me she thought that we could repair our relationship if I called more often, but after she told me she didn't love me anymore, I didn't see much point in it, so I didn't. I went back to radio silence for the next year until I got another phone call from my sister telling me that my mom had been put onto hospice care. I booked a flight home, and when I walked into the living room, it was kind of like walking into Santa Claus's nursing home. It was the beginning of December, and so despite my mom's help, they had decorated the entire house, and every surface had a nativity set or a Santa figurine, and there were trees and poinsettias and Christmas presents, and in the middle of it all is my mother lying on a hospital bed where our sofa used to be. And when I walked in the door that day, she kind of had to squint to see who's coming in with the light coming in. And when she recognized me, she just glared. "What are you doing here?" "Well, I'm here to watch you die," is what I thought. But instead, I just walked over and was like, "You know, I'm here to see you, Mom." And I leaned over to hug her because I didn't know what else to do. And I told her that I loved her, and she didn't say it back. "You know, Susan, you didn't need to come. I know how you feel about me from you not calling for so long." "Mom, you told me you used to love me. Past tense." "Susan, you'll just never understand how much you hurt me." I started crying and told her again how sorry I was and reminded her that I'd taken everything down offline. "Mom, I didn't mean to hurt you. Everything's gone, and I don't know how to take it back, but we're running out of time. I need you to forgive me. Please forgive me before it's too late." And she sighed and looked at me. "Susan, you'll never know how much you broke my heart." A few days after that, the hospice nurses came by, and they had given us this list of 9 things to look for as my mom's health declined. And at that point, we had gotten to 8 out of 9. I knew that I wasn't going to get that deathbed reconciliation I had hoped for. And my sister and I decided that even though Christmas was just a week away, we should probably go ahead and celebrate with Mom the next time she woke up, which we did. It's not easy to buy your mother a Christmas gift for her last Christmas. So once she got to mine, I was pretty excited that she laughed when she opened it. "Susan, I swear if I'd been able to go out and get you something, I was totally gonna buy you a Snuggie too." So it went over well, and that it was a nice moment. But after that, she didn't really come around a lot anymore. And soon we realized that my sister was going to have Mom on a hospital bed in the living room for who knew how long. So we put Mom into a nursing home as a temporary measure so that my sister could get her shit in order. And when we did, Mom came around as we were getting her settled into her room. I tried to explain where she was, and she seemed to understand. And when I told her it was just temporary and that we'd have her home as soon as possible, she just jerked her head to the side to show how pissed off she was at me. Later, we were leaving to go get dinner, and I told Mom that we'd be back after we ate. And for the first time in days, she forced out a single word. She stared directly into my eyes and just said, "Heartbroken." Before we got to the restaurant, my sister got a call from the nursing home, and they had found Mom unresponsive in her room, and they took her to the hospital. And 12 hours later, on December 29th, my mom was gone. Since then, Christmas has been a bummer. It's been 5 years this year, and so far, every year has either sent me into a ridiculous drinking binge to just numb it all out, or I dig into a hole of depression where I get all hermity and hide away until the new year. This year, however, I'm making a change. I have put my energy instead of into avoidance. I am focusing it on my work. And last week, on December 11th, which happens to be my mother's birthday, I launched my first solo show. Thank you very much. And tonight, I'm here sharing my story with all of you. So, Christmas 2015, so far, so good. Thank you.
This is Risk. This is David Carbonara behind me now, and we just heard a sadder sort of story about a mother and child relationship by Susan Kent, who you can find on Instagram at the Susan Kent. Folks, if you have a happy or a sad or any kind of story about being a parent or being a child of a parent, everything you need to know about how to pitch us is at risk-show.com/submissions. Folks, today's the day. Take a risk.
Hey, I'm Brett Podolsky, co-founder of The Farmer's Dog. We make fresh food for dogs. We started the company when we saw what a huge difference it made in my own dog, Jada, when she stopped eating ultra-processed kibble and started eating fresh, whole food. The Farmer's Dog food isn't fancy. It's just real food delivered to your door in pre-portioned packs. It's better for them and easier for you.
Get 50% off your first box at thefarmersdog.com/podcast. That's thefarmersdog.com/podcast.